Hello and welcome to the Perceptive Photographer Podcast. I am your host, Daniel Gregory. I am so excited about today's podcast. I am joined today by Dave Cross, an amazing instructor, amazing guy all around. Actually, Dave's a wonderful, wonderful individual and member of the Photoshop Hall of Fame, taught in every state, taught in multiple countries, creator of the virtual summit. So Dave Cross is just a really, really amazing educator. And one of the things that I'm so excited about having the chance to talk to Dave about today is a couple of things I get asked a lot from listeners of the podcast. Two of the big ones are about community and the other one's about simplicity. And how do we build a community? How do we get engaged? Why is community important for photographers? Why is it important to get out there and share our work and talk about our work? Another question I get asked a lot is about language and about how do we simplify our photography? How do we make things easier? And I think Dave Cross does two of those as well as anybody when it comes to photo education and Photoshop education. I think he does such an amazing job of building his own community, helping others build community, and he's one of the best, absolutely one of the best at making very complicated things seem so simple. So I'm so excited for him to be joining us today here on the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about the virtual summits, but before we jump into the interview, just a reminder that there is a Lightroom virtual summit coming up on May 20th through 24th. If you head up to my website at danieljgregory.com, scroll down on that main page, you'll find a link to register for a free week of Lightroom summit training. So make sure you jump on that. All right, let's go ahead and jump into here, our interview with Dave Cross. I hope you get a lot out of the interview. A little longer podcast than normal, but I think it's worth it. So I'm really excited to have Dave Cross here with me today. I don't know if I've ever told you, but I watched you teach probably 6-8 times before we ever met. And so I'm excited to be here just because I have a very long history with you, much longer than you have with me. So I'm excited to be here. So thanks so much for joining me.
Sure.
So the first time I had a film background and then I jumped into digital photography sort of. And I didn't have a big community of people in the digital space. And I went down back when it was NAP, when it was the National Association of Photoshop Professionals, had their Photoshop World conference. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'm going to go down there. I knew nobody. I mean, I didn't know a soul. And I bought my ticket and I got down there and I had made a short list of some people I wanted to meet. John Paul Caponegro was teaching there, who's since become a friend and a mentor, and some of these people. And I had been teaching, TAing and doing some teaching up here for film classes. And so on my list was what I thought were, and what I had heard were some of the best Photoshop instructors around. And one of the people's names who kept coming up was yours. And the class I went to, I have never used once what you taught in that class. It was automation inside of Photoshop. And the example you were giving was if you went and shot like a little league team and you could use some of the automation to, out of an Excel spreadsheet, sub in names and numbers and dates and everything. And I remember sitting there, it was like 45 minute class. And I thought to myself, you know, this is not something it's not what I do, but I left and I'm like, but if I had to go back and sit down at my desk, I could do that. And that is not easy in Photoshop. There's nothing easy about that workflow you went through.
Well, I was going to say that particular one was not your typical kind of layers and, you know, adjustment layers and things like that.
Yeah. So the thing that's always stuck with me is you have this amazing ability to make what seems to be complicated, very simple, and the way you break it down. And so I was kind of hoping maybe you could talk a little bit about how do you approach that? How do you sort of, better than I think most everybody else, make these complicated things, or seemingly complicated, even if it's just layers to people where it seems uncomplicated? What is it about your sort of approach and the way you design your teaching that you think makes that easier?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that, because that's one of the things that I've always aimed to do, is to make things easier for people. And I think a big part of it is I started teaching Photoshop right from the get-go, from, you know, after a couple of weeks after it was out in the world, when there weren't any resources to like go to YouTube or anything like that, because it didn't exist. So I don't really like the expression self-taught, but I mean, I had to be, because there was no other option. So as I was trying to learn some new function, like when layers came out, it was a brand new thing. I was like, wow, this is seeming like this could be really complex. So how could I think about it to make it easier for myself to understand? And for whatever reason, I kind of leaned towards sheets of acetate. And I thought, if I picture like pieces of plastic layered on top of each other, then to me, that makes it easier for me to understand. And so therefore, I would try explaining it that way to other people. And I think one of the biggest benefits to me early on is that a lot of my teaching was in small group situations, you know, 6-8 people on computers. So I could be doing things one-on-one and see, did the light bulb go off for that person or should I try some other approach? And I think that's benefited me over the years, because certainly there are people that can have only ever taught online and do a great job at it. But to me, it's that interaction of looking at people's faces and have them go, oh, you know, and then you kind of go, okay, so that worked. How can I build on that to make it easier to understand? So for me, I think that's been a big part of it, is just, I'm not a very technical person. So when I look at something new for my own use, I have to figure out a way to kind of compare it to something else or a different way of thinking of it, or try to break it down to the basics so that it's easier for me to understand, therefore can hopefully share that with other people and have them have that same reaction of, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's a interesting piece that you said too, about, you know, you start with you first. And you know, when I'm talking to a lot of photographers that I'm mentoring and working with, they're very concerned about other things they've watched, other people they've watched, or things like that. And there is something about, if you can explain it to somebody else, or you can explain it in your own head in a way that you understand, mm-hmm. that there is some beauty and elegance in that simplicity. And that doesn't mean that it's not great and effective. It's just simple.
I mean, I think along with that, it's also giving myself permission to go down a road of experimentation, go, well, that didn't work. You know, and I think there are some people that have that fear of, I'm going to break it, or I'm going to paint myself into such a corner that I'll, you know, it's going to be terrible. And it's like, well, as we all know, you some of the best things you learn are from trial and error, or allowing yourself to make a mistake and go, okay, so that didn't work. So now I know, when I'm adding a layer mask, make sure I do this first, because then it'll give me a better approach, or whatever it is. It's just giving yourself that kind of permission, as I'll call it, permission to experiment. You know, it's okay to try things and say, I wonder what happens if. And that's how I've discovered a lot of things that I teach, is just by going, no one's ever mentioned this before, but I'm just going to try it and see. Okay, sometimes it didn't work at all. Other times, oh, that's really interesting. That leads me down another path of, maybe then I could use it for this purpose. And one of my favorite things to do is to try to use my software for things that it wasn't necessarily designed for.
Yeah. You
know, like a way to use a function in Photoshop to make an interesting effect that wasn't probably the intent of the engineers when they built it, but because it can do it, then I try to make sure that I can, get a way to implement it based on, well, I'll try it and see what happens.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things, to, when you get to sit with Adobe's engineers and you show them something, and you can tell, they're like, well, that's not what that's for. Like, I know what I'm here for is, this takes me 8 steps. I'd like you to make it 1.
Exactly.
So another sort of piece that you mentioned in there is this ongoing education. So that's, you know, you're a Photoshop educator, and I mean, Hall of Fame, 50 states, multiple continents. Like, this is that's your thing. What excites you so much about that teaching aspect? And then the secondary part of that is the learning that comes out of that. Cause I know, as an educator myself, I'm in a constant learning mode. So what excites mm-hmm. you about the learning and the sort of teaching element?
Well, I think in a nutshell, it's knowing that, or hoping that, and then getting the feedback that says you helped someone. You know, I can't even count the number of times where, either at an in-person event like Photoshop World, someone stopped me in the hallway and said, I was in your class and what you showed me literally changed my life because it's going to allow me to do this, this, and this in ways that I never dreamed I could, or things like that. So the knowledge that as I'm showing people things, someone out there, especially now that it's online and I'm not getting that visual feedback, I know from experience that the type of things that I'm able to share, someone out there is going to be that person. They may not, I may not hear it, but I know that they're going to be the one going, oh my gosh, that's going to save me time. Let me be more creative, open doors that I didn't know existed, that kind of thing. So that, and as you said in the secondary part, I think it'd be different if nothing ever changed in Photoshop. So let me, if I can, tell you a quick story from my background. I actually went to school to be a phys ed teacher. That's actually what my background. So my degree's in education, but my major was in phys ed. So one of the things that we did at our university, which was actually great in this case for a kind of a different reason for me, was one of the semesters early on, it was a 3-year program. And in the second year, we did 3 days a week of student teaching where you'd go to a school and you'd be like the teacher's right hand, so to speak. And so I was at this kind of middle school and had been there for about a week. And the teacher said, okay, next week, we're going to start on our volleyball segment. And she reached behind her on a shelf and she pulled out a binder and said, here's the lesson plan I've been using for the last 10 years. And I remember thinking, wow, I don't know that I want to do that. I mean, a phys ed teacher, all the changes is the kids. You know, I mean, volleyball, maybe over the years, someone introduces a jump serve that didn't used to be there. But for the most part, it's the same lesson plan. And she didn't mean to say it that way, but that's the message that I got, was like, whoa. And that really changed things for me, because now I'm in the middle of my degree going, I don't know if I wanted to be a person that's, you know, standing in the gym in my tracksuit with saying the same thing to a different bunch of kids. So then I started to go a different direction and thought maybe the administrative side of sports, like sports promotion. So I worked in our college for, you know, promoting our upcoming games for the different sports teams, and because that allowed me to be more creative, and it was a little, so that was kind of the direction I was headed. And then I was at a job, and that's right when Photoshop first came out, and I went from manually typesetting a newsletter to using tools like Photoshop and PageMaker back then to create something digitally. And I was just like, okay, this is it. This is, and then the company that I was connected with suddenly said, hey, we need someone to teach Photoshop. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And in the very first couple of classes, I had that experience of people going, oh, that's new and different and exciting. And I was like, this is it. And that was never turned back from that initial time of teaching my first class in Photoshop 2 weeks after it came out in 1990 to continuing today to do the same thing. And you know, the fact that I can do this for so long and still have that excitement is because Adobe keeps innovating and things change and people have different desires of what they want to do with tools like Photoshop and Lightroom. So, you know, it gives me that enthusiasm to keep digging and saying, what else can we do and what else can we share?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a photographer named Stephen Shore, and one of the things Stephen talks about, and Stephen's one of these people, his first photo exhibition at 19 was the MoMA in New York. So he's like, you know, I started at the top, which means there's only one direction you get to go. And but he talks about that the constant need to reinvent oneself in some ways, and that, you know, you can find something you're good at and you can do that every day for the rest of your life and have been good at it. But it then lacks fulfillment at some point. It is that constant feeding of the newness in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's important. And I
can't imagine I'd be in the same boat if we were having discussion about, so you taught your first Excel class when? Because I mean, I don't think it'd be the same experience of saying, yes, and I've been teaching Excel ever since. I mean, there probably are people that do that, and good for them. But, you know, there's only so much innovation in that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, I mean, look at Photoshop over the years and think of layers and then some of the selection tools. And now, of course, AI, there's always new things and there's new ways to apply them. And as the cameras get better and different, and then there's video, and it just seems like there's always something. I consider myself a very creative person. So it feeds my creative juices by knowing that I can do things on my own, but then also share them with other people. And hopefully, and very often they're way better. Well, most of the time they're way better artists and photographers than me. And I feel like I've played a small role in their success because now they're able to create beautiful things that they want to create in part, at least based on hopefully some of the ideas I've given them along the way.
Yeah. I was a little sidebar. I did not plan on asking this, but it's been interesting that sort of integration of that, what they deem as AI into Photoshop and Lightroom and some of these tools as they get a little more sophisticated in their approach and what they can generate. And I found it really interesting sort of the response people have to that technology and the way that's sort of been integrated. And, you know, as a photographer, one of the things that I'm actually very excited about, and I've talked about this a number of times on the podcast, is I don't have any issues with like generative AI. I actually think it's really cool. Now, I don't think it's necessarily a photograph because I'm a nerd photographer who thinks photographs capture things in the world. And, you know, I do think there is a line between all generative and removing a telephone pole. And I also think you remove enough and add enough to a photograph, it becomes something else. And it's awesome because it is something else. Like, I love the fact that it's created new work. And I was just kind of curious, in the people you're teaching with, sort of how is that reception going? Is it something that people are, I'm not ever going to use, not realizing they've been actually using it for a very long time? Mm-hmm. It's just not been called AI.
I think that's part of it, is that even if you think about back to the very early days of Photoshop and the clone stamp tool, I mean, that was duplicating pixels in a pretty intelligent way when you think about it. I mean, it was a manual process for the user, but what was happening behind the scenes was pretty sophisticated when you think about it in that sense. So I think the people that I've talked to, there's all the various camps. There's certainly the people that are concerned about losing their jobs because of AI, and needless to say, for some people, maybe that is, you know, something that can be concerned over time. I don't see it happening too quickly. I read an interesting article, and I can't remember who it was. I'd like to give them credit, but who said if you have a mundane, every day is the same kind of job, then I'd be worried about my job with AI, because that's the type of job that can be easily replaced. If you're a creative that is doing things, and you can start seeing ways where you can incorporate AI into what you're doing, then I think there's at least a percentage of people that are looking at it that way, of going, what can it do to enhance what I'm already doing? I know for me personally, many years ago, I stopped using the term photograph, because a lot of what I did, I found early on, I really enjoyed compositing, creating things that didn't exist in the real world. So yeah. To me, I knew right away, I'm starting with a photo, but I'm doing something to create something that didn't exist. And so I would just say, look, here's an image that I created from my photographs. And I think AI presents the same possibility. I personally, one of the things that I've enjoyed the most from AI is experimenting with using things like generative fill to turn my photos into paintings, which means it's not generating something 100% new. It's adding an effect onto my image, which I think is kind of the best of both worlds, because it's a photo that I took. And in the good old days of, 6 years ago, it took quite a few steps to try to make something look like a realistic oil painting. And even then I was always like, it's okay. And then I started playing with some techniques. I'm like, I actually have a print in the wall in our guest bedroom that I did using, that AI painting kind of technique. And I was so happy with the result. It's probably the first time in years that I don't do a lot of printing myself. So I sent out to a lab and had it framed and everything. And now when people come in, they're like, oh, that's a cool painting. And I'm just like,
yeah, it's always great when they actually give you the feedback of what you were attempting.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, no, that reminds me, just a quick anecdote. The yeah, I love certain aspects of that. Like, I had an image I really liked, but I caught the it was through glass, and I caught the edge of a light reflection. And it was right when the generative beta came out. I was like, yeah, I was getting ready to go in and remove that. And I was like, oh, it's just going to be a lot of work. So I thought, I'll just give it a shot. So I looped it, and it was got me like 98% of the way there. Mm-hmm. And I had a little cleanup to do. And I was like, wow, that's like, that literally just saved me potentially hours of work. And I was like, now that for me, that's cool. It's still my photograph. It's what I would have done anyway. Mm-hmm. But then it reminded me, I watched somebody sent me a video to ask me about a workflow from one of the online YouTube instructors. And it's about 45 steps in Photoshop. And when it was all said and done, it was the clarity slider. Like when it was all said and done, the blend is, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And I was like, so I replied back. I'm like, interesting video. I'm just going to use the clarity slider. Why do it the hard way? So one of the other big sort of things in my, that I get asked a lot about, that I'm amazed at the, what you resulted out of this. So I get asked a lot about sort of, how do you build your community, your group of photographers, your group of artists, like how do you find and then cohesively hold that community together? And I know up on your website, your Dave Cross Workshops, you've got a really amazing community up there of people, and you've got events where people can connect with you and get one-on-one help or conversations as a part of that community. Can you talk a little bit about why having that community was important and not just here's some YouTube videos I post, but you've got this active, engaged group, and then sort of what you do to help feed that so that those people keep coming back and stay connected in a meaningful way?
Well, I think the first part of that goes back to what we talked before about the interaction, where I used to teach and see people's faces. Now that I don't see their faces, excuse me, if I was just doing something on YouTube, yeah, you might get some comments, but the unfortunate reality is, at least my experience has been that at least half the comments are just not terribly useful. Let's just put it that way. So by having more of a community of it's that interaction. So I know that if I post something, I'll get comments, I'll get some emails with saying this, that was a great technique. Could you also use it for this? And I'm like, that's a great idea. Thank you. And it's building that feeling with the people that, so they don't just become like an email subscriber, but more of someone that should feel okay with commenting on, you know, a post on Facebook. And one of the things that I encouraged people in my community early on is, and I can't remember exactly how I said it, but I think I commented on the fact that recently I saw a wonderful photo someone had posted in a completely different group, and all the comments were thumbs up, awesome, love it, excellent. And I'm like, please don't do that to my photos, because I mean, I'm not doing this to stroke my ego. So just putting awesome, why is it awesome? Like what makes you say that? Like, so please, if you're going to interact, let's try to be a little more helpful and give a little more feedback than just saying, you know, like, it's like, okay, but what was it about it you liked? Did it, you know, generate some kind of emotion in you? Did it bring back memories? Did you just think it was a nice use of lighting? You know, that kind of thing. And I think that encouraging that from the beginning helped people realize that I'm hoping they're going to be a little more interactive. And I think on an ongoing basis, and to be fair, it's been a while because I've been so focused on the other side of my business, which is the virtual summits, that I haven't done as much of this as I used to. But I found that when I posted a photo, instead of saying, here's a photo that I took with this lens using these settings, it was more post a photo and then ask some questions like, does this resonate with you? If so, why? Was there something, have you ever been to a place like this? What was your favorite? Like, kind of asking some leading questions so that people would be less likely to just say, like, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a really great thing to do, because I think sometimes people just don't know what to say. Like, mm-hmm. and if you can give them a prompt of like, hey, yeah, what do you think of XYZ or whatever?
Right.
I think that's a really good, because then it opens up them to at least feel like, well, if, at least if I answer the question Dave asked, I'm not going to look stupid. I'm actually answering that question.
Right.
And I think that's a really
and hopefully good point. It makes them not only think of that for when they're asked the question, but then moving forward, if they just see an image posted, that they don't go into instant critique mode and say, well, I think you missed the shadow on the right-hand side and the edge over here. It's like, you know, to be a little more thoughtful. It's one of my pet peeves when I used to be more heavily involved in a couple of larger photography and Photoshop Facebook groups, but I got so tired of people being so critical of other people's work. I mean, you know, in a lot of these groups, they say CC appreciated, which is supposed to be constructive criticism, but many people are like just downright mean, to be honest. They're like, you know, the shadow looks horrible, or that does not look realistic at all. And instead of trying to be helpful, especially for someone who's new, all they do is sort of find the negatives. And I'm like, I'm not sure how that helps anybody. So I kind of backed off some of those groups because I found it a little bit on the depressing side of seeing out of 30 comments that people started to comment to other commenters saying, hey, you know, back off a bit here. Like, it's when you have to admonish other people that their comments are getting a little bit too extreme, that's never a good thing. So hopefully by asking some of those questions, it also encourages people to be thinking about that anytime they see an image is, oh, this looks great because, or this made me happy because it reminds me of whatever it is. So it's a little more than just great job.
Yeah. I always tell the people in my critique classes that when you get a feedback, you have to figure out, is that feedback meant to make you better, or is it make the other person feel good?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
So you mentioned the other half of your kind of business world, the other half of what you do, which is the virtual summits. And I've emailed this to you a few times, but this is my favorite thing that one of my favorite things that I do is the virtual summits. And I'm pretty sure everybody who listens to the podcast, they know about the virtual summits because I talk about them often. It's one of the few products I actually promote in my podcast. And from the first time you contacted me when COVID hit and you said, hey, I have this idea that mm-hmm. nobody can leave their house. We should do something. Yep. They are truly amazing. So I know a little of the background, but beyond just the COVID, can you talk just a little bit about how you came up, sort of the idea for the first one? And then we'll talk a little bit more about sort of how that's sure. evolved, but really sort of how did that come about for you?
Well, it was definitely a timing thing because I'd been somewhere along the way, and I can't remember now where I first saw the term virtual summit, but I was poking around somewhere, and it wasn't nothing to do with our industry. It was like, you know, one of those how to 10x your income in 2 days, kind of like the schmaltzy, you know, sales workshop kind of thing. But it was presented as a, you know, multiple speakers over 4 days and for free. And I was just like, So I started exploring the concept. And I was like, that's an interesting model where you're providing the opportunity for people to watch for free. And then if they really like it, they can purchase. So rather than charging an admission fee and hope that people like it. So I kind of filed that away thinking, you know, that's an interesting concept. And then right when the pandemic hit and I was getting all these emails going, you know, the conference you were speaking at has been postponed. I thought, well, I'm clearly not the only one. Plus all the people who were losing income because their job as a photographer or a designer was put on hold. I thought, well, most people out there have got nothing else to do. So I kind of jumped in with both feet and said, well, I'm going to try one of these virtual summit things. And the interesting little side note is in my I take after my dad, because he was the kind of person where anytime he had any idea or was going to travel, back in his day, he would go to the library and bring home 14 books on the subject. And but I, for me, it was more like ebooks. And so I had downloaded a bunch of ebooks on virtual summits. And one of the things that they kept saying was, the hardest thing you're going to find is how to find your speakers. And I was like, nah, not for me, because luckily I've been doing it for long enough that a lot of my good friends and colleagues are people I've known for years who teach at things like Photoshop World and Creative Live and all the other things that I've done over the years. So that part was actually not difficult. It was more finding the software solution to present it. But even that, I kind of lucked into something. So I just jumped in and, you know, starting from scratch where you didn't have a mailing list. So I asked all the instructors that part of the deal is you help promote it and you'll benefit from, you know, the only way instructors get paid is as a portion of the sales. So that way it, you know, behooves them to try to help promote it. And the first one went, I had no expectations. I had no idea what to expect. And it, the number of people who signed up, and to me, more importantly, so yes, the financial side was very good for everyone, which was a nice at the time where all our income as speakers was disappearing. So that was great. But to me, the much bigger thing was the number of people who responded saying, this is what I needed, because I was kind of like in a panic state going, what am I going to do because of the pandemic? And the number of people, a very heartfelt email saying, thank you so much for making it free because I don't have any income right now, so I wouldn't have been able to attend. That was fantastic to me. That was the most beautiful thing of it, was getting that kind of feedback.
In addition to
the fact that the comments about the quality of the training was also very good as well, of course. And so, you know, the long story short, that just became like, okay, that went really well. Let's try one on Lightroom. And that one went very well. So it became kind of a, well, for Photoshop, I tend to do them every year, and Lightroom kind of skip every couple of years just because there's, let's be honest, there's less topics to cover in Lightroom than there are in Photoshop. But yeah, it's been, you know, over the years I've done, I think this one coming up is my ninth in total, and have at a point where I thought perhaps because in-person events were starting to reoccur that perhaps the enrollment would decrease, but the number of people who contact me and say, please don't stop doing virtual summits because I live in France, Australia, you know, England, whatever, I'm not going to fly to Orlando for an in-person event. So, you know, this kind of thing still resonates with me. So as I only semi-jokingly said to one of the other instructors just the other day, I'll keep doing them until people stop signing up, because, you know, the response continues to be very good, that it's the right balance of you can watch it for free if you want, you can purchase a VIP pass if you want, and, you know, there's enough even topics where it sounds like, well, in Photoshop, how many classes can you have on layers? Well, actually, it turns out quite a few, because different instructors have different takes on things and different approaches. So even though on the surface the topic is the same, how it's presented is different. You know, same with the Lightroom topic. Like, you've done classes on black and white, so is someone else, and but they take different approaches, so people can still learn wonderful ideas, even if in a 45-minute class, a lot of it's like, yeah, I've heard that before. But then suddenly there's one, that one little gem that the instructor just sort of casually says, oh, and by the way, I do this. And people go, wow, that's fantastic. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And one of my, and I love the way you treat us as instructors, from the support you give us and the marketing materials. And I get to make my little video, and the freedom you give for that. And is amazing. But a big part for me is that when you said it was going to be free, and then there was this pass people could buy, and that's how we got paid. I remember for that first one, I thought to myself, even if I netted zero, but people got to watch and learn for free, I was like, that is awesome. Like, and it's vetted instructors. These are people that, you know, this isn't, I got to dig through 500 YouTube videos to find something. I know if I sit down to watch Ben Wilmore teach me about organization, I'm going to learn something. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was really powerful, that you recognize that there's people who are doing amazing things who just can't afford to do a $3,000 conference. And it gave them access to that. And that was big. And then the other thing you just said is, it's one of my favorite parts of the summit, actually. And I watch a lot of the classes at the summits. I mean, even the instructor, but like the upcoming Lightroom one, I've got a printing one. And then Glenn Dewis has got a variation of a printing, like troubleshooting piece. I'm so excited to watch Glenn's class on printing. And I'm a master printer. This is what I do.
Yeah.
But it's what you said. Glenn has something in that 45 minutes that either I haven't thought about that way, or I didn't know about, or I have never tried. And that is that it's worth its weight. Julianne Cost, who I just, you know, adore as an instructor. Julianne teased me one time. She's like, "You're always in the front row at my classes." I said, "I'll make a deal with you. You stop teaching me something new, I'll stop coming to your classes."
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and the other part with the Lightroom one, of course, now in the world of Lightroom, it's a potentially confusing feel because we've got Lightroom Classic and we have Lightroom and Lightroom Desktop and Cloud and, you know, but Matt Kluskowski, who I rely on for the Lightroom Summit to help pick the classes, instructors and so on, said that, you know, I think a lot of people get too hung up on, well, is it Lightroom Classic or Lightroom? Because when it comes down to it, when you're in the develop side of it, it's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it might look slightly different and might be even, unfortunately, a terminology difference. But he said, I would encourage someone to watch a Lightroom Mobile class, even if you're never going to use Lightroom Mobile, because the way someone approaches editing their photo is more important than the fact that they're on a phone using this slider while you're on your computer using, well, the same slider, but just in a different interface. Yeah, and that to me is a really good point, is that, yeah, there's going to be a few exceptions to that. But overall, if someone's teaching a tips class on Lightroom and you're a Lightroom Classic user, I would still watch it. It's just like one of my favorite pieces of feedback. A gentleman, this is a couple years ago at one of our summits, he emailed me before it started. He said, "I looked at the schedule, and to be honest, there's only a handful of classes that really interest me." And I said, fair enough. But I said, I would encourage you, pick a class just arbitrarily that you think, well, I would probably never do this. This doesn't interest me at all. And just watch it. Just because you never know what it might instill in you, you know, what it might generate. And he wrote back after something was over and said, "I'm so glad you said that, because I ended up watching a handful of classes that I had circled as this doesn't interest me, but I'm going to take Dave's advice." And he was like, "I picked up so many ideas. In one case, I had completely was anti HDR. I just didn't believe it was a thing." Yeah. And then I watched Ben Wilmore show examples and I was like, now I want to try it. And I was like, that's kind of the point, is, you know,
yeah.
And of course we have the benefit as an online event, unlike an in-person event where there's typically multiple classes going on at the same time. So you can't watch them all. With the summit, you know, you can find the time or buy the VIP pass and take as much time as you want. But that way you can give yourself the opportunity to watch something that on the surface you think, this probably won't be much of interest to me. Yeah. And then you just never know.
Yeah.
Especially with the instructors we have.
Yeah. No, I in my own world, one time Christina Shirk actually was doing a class on frequency separation for portrait retouching. And I was like, I'm going to take that class. I'm like, I don't ever use frequency separation. I certainly don't do portrait retouching at that level, and I sat in there and I was 10 minutes in and she did something about hair with the frequency. And I was like, oh my God, that's trees in clouds. I'm like,
right.
And then all of a sudden I got the notebook out and I'm like frantically taking notes now. Cause I'm like, oh my God, that's not what I do, but that's what I need. And so it's amazing what you get when you just branch out a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. I've just got a couple of rapid fire questions here. We'll sort of wrap up here. Just some kind of first top of mind here. What would you consider to be the greatest influences on you in your sort of career and in creative path?
That's a really interesting question. I would say a big part of it is my upbringing. I was lucky enough to be brought up in a family where there was curiosity was encouraged. Both my parents were huge readers. Like their den rivaled some libraries in terms of the number of books. So they instilled in me early on the reading and curiosity and being willing to kind of just try things and see what happens. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, that's become kind of a credo that I'm always just going, well, you know, let's just try it and see what happens. So I think that's a big part of it. And then along the way, I just had a couple of happy coincidences where the companies that I started working for had the leaders had a similar kind of approach where, yes, you had to do your job, but don't be afraid to try this. And as long as it doesn't cost us money, try it and see what happens. And I think that's probably been the biggest thing.
All right. Do you have a daily ritual or a morning ritual you do every day? Simple or complex?
I don't know if it's a ritual, but I have a wonderful dog that even though our vet told us when he was a puppy, oh, don't worry, he'll grow out of it. And now 9 years later, hasn't happened yet. He's a definitely early bird gets the worm kind of dog. So I start my day much earlier than I would otherwise by choice. So as a result, there are times where, without getting too graphic, he does part of his business and I think he isn't quite finished yet. So I'll be sitting out. We have kind of in Florida, we call it a lanai, which is like a back porch kind of a thing screened in and a very nice area behind, no houses behind us. So there'll be some mornings where I just sort of sit there mostly waiting for him to see if he needs to do anything more, but it kind of gives me that moment where it's sometimes I might snooze. Sometimes I just kind of look out and enjoy the nature, and it kind of gets me centered a little bit. I'm not a big believer in, you know, like meditating or anything, but that's kind of my little version of that, I guess.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Is there something you've done that you're recently that you're proud of?
I mean, I'm one of the things that always makes me proud is what my family does, my kids and now grandkids. So that's a big part of it. But within the last year, as a hobby for many, many years, I've sung in a barbershop singing group. And our chorus I've been in existence for 78 years, and we won our first international medal in our history last year, third place at an international competition, which for us was like very big. So that's, it's kind of an accomplishment that makes me proud that the average person be like, say what now?
Oh no,
in my world. And, my son sings with me in the same group. So it's kind of a shared, family accomplishment as well.
Congratulations. That's very cool. That's a great one. I was not expecting that. That's really cool. Is there a recent book, since you're an avid reader, a recent book that you really enjoyed?
I have a really strange and varied taste in books. So some years ago started the Amazon, I forget what it's called now, but it's like a version of that for books where you can just grab books without, you pay a monthly amount or something. So I have had the philosophy, kind of a similar philosophy as I have in life of try it and see what happens. So I will say that most recently, most of the books that I've tried have not been ones that I would even remember. So I'm kind of on the opposite end of that, going halfway. I usually don't give up on a book, but there's been a couple that I was like, no.
All right.
Never mind.
Fair enough. So the rule of thumb there is if you sign up for the Book of the Month Club at Amazon, just sometimes it's okay to quit.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I would say I always have dreams where I have the ability to somewhere between flying and hovering.
All right.
So I always, in my dreams, that seems really cool. So I'd say maybe that would be nice. I could be my own drone and take photos from up high.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same. I think flying would be pretty cool. Every time I go out and watch birds, I'm like, that looks like a pretty good way to travel.
Right. Exactly.
Is there a band or a musician, dead or alive, that you would love to see in concert that you haven't?
Hmm. I mean, I say I'd go old school and say I would have loved to see the Beatles in their prime, just because they're in our heads at a, people of a certain age so much. Even people, younger people who never might have even seen them, certainly seem to be familiar with their music. And back in the day, they were definitely one of the ones that I used to listen to a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. For a band, it's definitely the Beatles, because I mean, you can't have like 27 number one hits and not think that'd be a good concert. All right, if you had one piece of advice to give to somebody who is just sort of starting out or feeling like they're struggling a little bit with their creative practice, what would you tell them?
The risk of repeating myself, I think it's like the big part of it is don't be afraid to fail, like just to try things and see what happens. Don't worry about living up to other people's expectations. You know, if you do post a photograph and you get some negative feedback, recognize that that's just the way of the internet, is that there are people out there that, you know, are going to be like that, and do it for yourself. You know, I long time ago when I started realizing that I loved the compositing, and there were some people like, well, that's not a real photograph. I'm like, I don't care. I'm doing it for me. Yeah. And I want to create something. I'm looking right now up on my wall as a photo that I took. Gosh, it was probably 15 years ago that we did that. I did some things in Photoshop and have it printed on a canvas, and I look at it every day and it makes me happy. So that's to me what it's all about.
Yeah. No, I was hoping that would be your advice, because that's, I think that's probably the most important piece of advice is, the analogy I give is when you're five and I grab that purple crayon and I make that sky purple or I make that sky green, it is awesome. And I am, and then somebody tells me skies have to be blue. Yeah. And then I think Picasso said, my entire life is me trying to get back to who I was as an artist at five.
Mm-hmm.
Like that failure thing in adults is just gut wrenching and how powerful that is. So I think that's great.
I see it every day. One of the things that are very blessed is that I'm able to balance my work life with babysitting our grandsons, and the younger one just turned 3. And it's so fascinating to see how everything to him is like, he builds stuff out of whatever toy we're working with. And if it falls apart at first, he's a little bit, you know, upset, but then he just like tries something different, maybe put something else this way. And it's just, you know, he doesn't have that feeling like I'm thinking, don't put that on there because it's going to fall over. But then he does and it falls and he's just like, oh, and then he tries something different. And that's just the way kids are, that as adults, for some reason, we get too cautious maybe sometimes.
Yeah. All right. So if somebody wanted to find you and hang out with you in your little community there, where would they do that?
Probably the main website I have is dcross.com, which has links going out to various other things. So that's probably the place to start.
And then, you know, and a shameless self-promotion on both our parts, you know, if you're not doing anything May 20th to the 24th, or if you're going to be out of town that week and you buy a VIP pass, you can get access to that upcoming Lightroom Summit. And it is a pretty amazing lineup again. Great classes. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that'll start on Monday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern time on the 20th. So make sure you just sign up for that. And that's up at lightroomsummit.com.
Yeah, the schedule's up there now, so you can see all the classes and get descriptions. And
circle the ones that you don't want to take that you're going to take.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Dave, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate this. It's nice to get to hear a little bit about your experience and how you approach things. I really appreciate it. And like I said, you know, these are the topics that come up over and over again for the listeners for my podcast, but
sure,
a different perspective. So I'm hoping they'll take those and apply those to the areas they're sort of thinking about struggling with. So really appreciate it and have a wonderful day. Hopefully it stays sunny down there in Florida.
Well, it's funny you say that, because right now we just before we went on, started this, where there was a major thunderstorm going on that I was a little worried about whether I'd actually still have power, but we made it through. So it was it was my pleasure, Daniel. Appreciate the,
All right. Thanks so much.
All righty.
So that's our interview with Dave Cross. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something. I know I did. I got a lot out of actually listening to Dave talk about his process, his practice, sort of his background, how he approaches his teaching and all of those different aspects. So I know I got a lot. So hopefully you did too. Thank you so much for being a listener of The Perceptive Photographer and listening to this a little bit longer than normal podcast. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you're not a subscriber, that'll make sure you get the newest updates to the podcast when they're released every Monday. Again, don't forget to check out that Lightroom Virtual Summit May 20th through 24th. Link up on my website on the homepage there. Also, we'll be returning to a few more normal podcasts here, and then I've got a couple more interviews lined up, so hopefully you're enjoying the interviews. I've got a few more of those in the can that I'm working on. Actually, I guess they're not in the can. They're being worked on right now, but they'll be up and available here shortly. Thanks again for listening. Have a wonderful week. Again, I am Daniel Gregory, your host of The Perceptive Photographer, and I'll see you next time.